Just because it's being recorded, I'm going to say my name and number here for the people that aren't coming. So my name is Avi Tenenbaum. My number is 054-845-1458. If you have any questions or you want to get the PowerPoints, the slides of this, so email me at avitenenbaum9@gmail.com. This is the second week. There are handouts on the table, as I'm sure everybody knows. Again, we have a homework sheet over here that you could do or you could not do. You could show it to me or you don't have to, whatever you want. We have the slides. We have a few more than usual, so we'll see how we pace ourselves this week. Now, last week, we spoke about the topic called You Are Here, and that was all about basically determining where a person is holding, or if he's dealing with Bachrim, where is this Bachar holding, a family member, you know, they have a certain issue that's going on, so what is the issue, and what direction can we take it to for help? And each week, because people asked me last week, I missed the first week, so, you know, can I come the second week, can I come the third week? Each week is kind of a different topic. So this week we're going to talk about habits, and even if you missed last week, that's fine. We're going to be talking about bad habits, good habits, how habits are formed, and how to break habits. I would say that I use these tools the least, but the reason why I use these tools the least is because I get presented these issues the least. Usually I get things that are such a strong, full-blown addiction, totally out of control, that I usually use the tools that are going to be coming next week. But these are also great tools, and these actually are helpful for everybody as well. So we should pay attention to them. Everybody has good and bad habits, and no matter what issue we're dealing with, obviously knocking out some bad habits in our life helps us to have more resources and to do things a little bit better. Okay, so let's move to box number two. So box number two, we have some Torah stuff here. So it says, you know, the idea of a habit, of course, is in the Torah many, many places, okay? So it says, this is from the Dubna Magid. He wrote a sefer called Sefer Hamidos. I never in my life would have found this, but the Oz Behadar, they put out this whole alphabetical thing called Matbi'a Shotavu Chachamim, and it's in there under the word Hergel, so you could check it out. It says, even something that a person thought he'd never do, once he does it two or three times, it suddenly becomes easier for him to consider doing it again. Right? This is what Chazal are telling us by the words Avar Lishanaba Naasa Maikaheta. That once he does something that he shouldn't be doing one time, and then he repeats it, he begins to experience the sin or the behavior as if it is permitted to do. Okay? So the more we do something, the more it's easier to do. The more it's easier to do, not only because we're used to it, but because we experience it differently. This was something that was really bad. I crossed a line. But now that I did it three or four times, it's not so bad anymore. Okay? That's one place that you can find about a hergel, a habit. And there's tons of places. Look at box number three. This is a good type of habit. And this is from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I'm sure everyone's seen this. A person needs to get up in the morning like a lion. Right? Bad timing. Okay, a person needs to get up in the morning like a lion. If he accustoms himself to getting up this way four or five times, it won't be so hard for him afterwards. And that's a good habit, right? So we have the ability to form habits. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. So a habit itself is not anything in particular. Okay, let's look at box number four. This is an interesting one. After the Yetzer Hara pushes a person to a certain point of sin, he no longer needs to encourage them to sin, because that person will go and do it on his own without the Yetzer Hara's help. Okay? And once a person makes a habit of pursuing lust on his own, he begins to lust for things that are not even natural to lust for. Okay? So this is just another example where the Yetzer Hara, his job is to get a person into the habit of doing something that he shouldn't be doing. But once he forms that habit, so the Yetzer Hara can take it easy. He can go to the beach because the guy's already doing it with his habits, okay? So these are just all examples of habits. The reason why we're talking about this in Shovavim is because sometimes the Shovavim problems that we have are habits. I wouldn't necessarily call them an addiction, but they would be called habituation. It's a bad habit. It's something you don't like, you know, you don't want to be doing. even if a person has an addiction, there's still other habits that are getting in the way that if he would just kick those habits, it would make things a lot easier. If he would be getting up on time in the morning, if he would be able to get in the habit of doing his work right away, he would find life half as hard as it would be. So breaking habits is good for everybody. That's what we're going to talk about. Now if we look at, okay, I'm reminding you guys to ask questions if you have any questions. That's what makes it interesting. If it's a really private question, so save it till after, okay? Yeah.
So do we address how we know if it's a habit or if it's an addiction?
That's a good question. How do we know if it's a habit or an addiction? I don't remember if I had a slide on that last week, but that's a very, very good question. I would say one of the easiest ways to know if something is a habit or an addiction is if there is a total loss of control and he's tried everything and this has been going on for years and it's progressing, it's getting worse. He's organizing his whole life around, you know, whatever it is that he doesn't want to be doing. That's probably an addiction. A habit is something that he got into this bad habit, he's used to doing it, but, you know, probably a bad habit isn't something that's been going on for 30 years in a row that's progressing. It's kind of like staying at the same type of level. He has some willpower that he can still use, that if he just applies his willpower in the right way, he can get out of it. You know, if he just does this right thing and that right thing, he can probably pop himself out of this. And once he pops out of it, he can probably stay out of it. Addiction, though, is chronic. That's what we said last week. And that means that even if he pops himself out of it, he has to keep himself out of it. Okay, a bad habit is acute. So it's something that we shouldn't be doing. You know, we, you know, on Shabbos, we have this habit of sleeping a little bit in or whatever it is. We're not going to shul on time. It's probably not a chronic problem that you have to go to groups for and maintain your whole life. Right? You pop out of it and you're done. It is very important to know where a problem is holding. That's extremely important because sometimes people, they either go for things that are too small and they need something bigger, or the opposite. They need something bigger. They need something smaller and they go for something big and it causes huge problems. I'll just mention this because it's interesting. I was reading an article last night, and the article claimed that group therapy for kids that are on drugs are very bad. It makes things much worse. And they brought a proof, and the proof is from a story. Okay, so first of all, it's not good to bring a proof from a story. That's the first problem. But, right, we say kasha v'maisa, right? But the second problem was, the story was that this kid was caught smoking weed in school a bunch of times, and the school counselor decided to send him off to rehab. And therefore, he met with a bunch of guys, and these were all these, you know, guys that were like heroin users, and this kid just smoked marijuana, and it was total mismatch, and he heard all the war stories that they were talking about, and all the cool stuff that they tried, and then he wanted to try it. 7 weeks later, he went out, and he tried everything, and it got worse, okay? The problem with that story was not that he went to a group, the problem was that he went to something that was much higher than his level, and he learned new things. If he would have not only been using marijuana, but using all the different types of drugs, okay, and his stuff would have been totally out of control, that would have been a good shidduch for him. Okay, so it's always good to know where we're holding, and that's why last week's topic is very important. Okay, let's get to 5 now. Let's look at box 5, and we're going to get into the clinical stuff now about habits. Okay? Why does the brain form habits? The process of habit forming is the brain's way of conserving energy and health. If you had to concentrate your brain on doing everything as if it was the first time you ate food or read a book, it would consume a lot of energy and be overwhelming. The habit-forming mechanism is part of the administrative function of the brain to run the show, meaning your life or your body, as best as possible. Your brain is very smart and has a mind of its own, making these decisions for you without your conscious consent or knowledge. Okay? So what is a habit? Why do we form habits? That's really the question now. Why do we form habits? It's because it makes our life more efficient. Okay? We're going to explain in the next box how it's more efficient. Just because we said here that when we think, it causes a lot of energy to be used. I saw a statistic, okay, that 25% of the energy that we have in our body goes to thinking, okay? Now, if you're a guy that thinks too much, you're going for 35%, 45%, 50%. That's very stressful. It's very taxing on your body, okay? You would never expect that something just like thinking can have a huge effect, okay? But thinking uses a lot of energy, and because it uses energy, so the brain says, hey, this is a high-energy task. Let's see how we can reduce the energy. Just like my computer here, right? it has these different energy saving options that, you know, if you leave it open for a certain amount of time, it dims, and then it goes in on hibernation, right? And it's trying to figure out how to save my battery, and that's what our brain is doing, okay? Let's move on to 6, and we're going to hear exactly what this is. And we're not saying this because we're training to be therapists, per se, but we're going to see the ethos, the ways how to break habits based on this stuff. So we're setting it up now in order to understand how to break the habits. Okay, so look at box 6. What exactly happens when a decision becomes a habit? Conscious decisions are made in a part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. Okay, when we do something enough times, our brain tells us that this repeated behavior should now be carried out by a different part of the brain called, this is a funny word, the basal ganglia. Okay, I did not name this, so don't blame me for that. The basal ganglia is able to take a behavior and turn it into an automatic routine. By doing this, our prefrontal cortex is now free to engage in new and other things, okay? So there's different parts to our brain. Our brain has tons of parts to it. It's not just the left or right brain. We have this conscious part of the brain, and that's the prefrontal cortex. And it does something enough times, thinking, concentrating, focusing, planning, remembering, and it says, look, we already know what he wants to do. He's done this 10 times already. He's done it in the same place at the same time. So let's just turn it into an automatic routine, and we're going to send it to a different place, and that's the basal ganglia, that's somewhere else, and we're going to let him do it as an automatic type of thing, and that's going to free the prefrontal cortex up so that we can think new things with focus and concentration. Okay, the example that we gave here, a yeshiva accepts 18-year-old boys for the first year program. Now, after first year, the boys are done. It's time for them to go to second year, right? Now, of course, it's good for them to go to second year because they need a more challenging way of learning. But it's also good for the yeshiva if they move up to second year because now they can have a new group of first-year guys and they have the beds for it and the room for it. So they're moving the first-year guys out so that the space is free to take in a new batch. Okay, that's what our brain is doing, and so it turns it into a habit. It's very interesting, but that's how habits work. Okay. Now let's move on to 7. Okay. Habits can be broken down into 3 parts. Okay. So we have the cue or the trigger, we have the behavior, and we have the reward. And if you look at the equation at the bottom of box 7, it says cue plus behavior plus reward equals habit. Okay, this is like a cycle. And if anything in this thing is missing, then you're going to ruin that cycle. Okay, and that's important to know when we're going to break habits later on. What are they? So let's look at number 1. So number 1 is the cue or the trigger. Okay. The thing that causes the habit to come about, that's the trigger or the cue. It arouses the desire to perform the habit. It pulls him into going to do the habit. It might be a certain time, a sight, a thought, etc. Okay. Last week we gave an example. This was a pretty extreme example, and that's why I like it. We had an example of a trigger of a friend of mine that I know, that cold, windy weather in the fall would trigger him to act out. Okay, that's a really interesting trigger. I've never heard it before, and I may never hear it again. Okay, that's a trigger, and what that is that he wasn't necessarily planning to do it or thinking about it. I mean, maybe then he was, but now he's not. He's doing really well. But if he gets that gust of wind coming in through the window, and it's during the fall, because that's when we'll see why it has to do with the fall. Okay, remind me. Okay, so all of a sudden, there's the basal ganglia wakes up, and it says, hey, you're supposed to act out now, aren't you? Now, that's a trigger. Okay, so like the trigger arouses the behavior. Now, number 2 is the behavior. This is the actual thing which is done as the habit. Okay, it is the biting of the fingernails, the acting out, or searching the internet for arousing material. Okay, so the trigger wakes us up to do the behavior. Let's say the person fell for it. He did the behavior. So now number 3 is the reward. Without the reward, you can't form a habit. So what's the reward? This is your brain's response that says, hey, I enjoyed that. And the decision in your mind to continue doing this behavior because it feels good, this step is the link that encourages the behavior to continue. Okay? So because it feels good or because it feels bad, that's what's going to predict what happens next. Right? What do we do with a little child? Right? We put their finger near a stove that's not so hot but hot enough that he can tell. And we say, hot, 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 misukan, right? And what we're doing is we're trying to get their brain to understand that if you feel this sensation of something that's hot, that's not good, it's dangerous, stay away, okay? And that message gets encoded in our brain. So the same thing is true with a trigger. The trigger is something that's our brain's way of remembering, like the clue that clues us into doing the behavior. So then we go and actually do the behavior, we fall for it, and then there's a reward because it feels good. And I remember that when I do A, it feels good. When I do A, it equals B, and that makes me feel good. So I want to do it again. Okay, that's how it works. And that's important, like we said before, because we're going to know how to break habits based on that. Okay. Let's go to 8. Yeah.
Does it necessarily have to be a trigger? If someone's sleeping in the morning, mm-hmm. just comfortable. There's a behavior and there's a reward that feels good to sleep, but what's the trigger there?
That's a good question. I didn't think about that particular example.
Sleep is the trigger.
Sleep is the trigger?
Or is the trigger?
I mean, I wonder what types of thoughts are going on in his mind. You know, a thought can be a trigger. So I wonder that person that he's sleeping in, okay, I wonder if he had a thought before he went to sleep, so the vector came in, and I wonder if at, you know, it's 7 o'clock already, and he has that thought, like, you know, let's say the cue or the trigger is like, this feels really good. You know, when I have this blanket on me like this, with this warmth, and I feel like I'm in, like, my mother's womb in this, like, cocoon, you know?
So, could it be that if I get out of bed, my life's so damn unmanageable, but I just want to have my last little respite from that unmanageability?
It could be. It could be as well.
I think my blanket is a bomb shelter.
A blanket is a bomb shelter. That's a good one. Okay? I didn't think about this subject, about this example. Okay? I'll think about it. Let's go to 8, okay, and we'll address your question in a little bit different way. Why do we need a cue to form a habit? We start doing the behavior on a conscious level. It's our decision to do or not to do whatever is the behavior in question. However, as we make this decision repeatedly, our brain starts to do the behavior on autopilot. Since we are on autopilot and no longer making a conscious decision, we need a trigger or cue to arouse our subconscious to carry the habit. Okay, so when my friend in the story of the wind, when he was acting out, so he didn't need a cue because he was choosing to act out, okay? But now, for sure he needs a cue because he's in recovery, he's doing really well. He doesn't want to have anything to do with acting out. But it's still that part of the brain gets aroused when the trigger comes in, blowing it through the window, okay? That arouses him to do the behavior, okay? That was a more transparent type of case. I still have to think about yours, okay? Just to finish the box number 8, upon seeing the cue through the 5 senses, our basal ganglia tells our body to perform the habit. If we're not making a decision, then we need to somehow know when to do the behavior, and that happens by having the cue. This thing has to happen without me thinking, and that's what the cue does for you, basically. Okay? The brain is saying, like, don't worry, I'll take care of this. You go work on some new project, on some new thought, okay? I'll have a certain clue that if I see or feel or hear this thing or think this thing, so I'm going to do the job. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. Okay. Okay. To move to 9. It started with a goal or more conscious decision, but now ... Okay. People start doing the behavior for a reason. It might be to see what happens or because it provides relief. Okay, in David Chaim's example, so the guy, he wants to stay in his bed because it provides relief. He doesn't know how to get on in this world without suffering a tremendous amount of pain. But over time, this turns into a habit, and the original goal or reason becomes less necessary, since the habit now becomes more innate. Okay, so we started doing this thing for a reason. Okay, maybe a person was very anxious, so he started picking his lip or something. Okay, and he's not anxious anymore, but he's been accustomed to doing this. Okay, the brain has turned it into a habit. Okay, so the reason why something is happening does not necessarily mean that if we have a habit now, that reason is present. It could be the reason is like this old, outdated reason and it's faded away, but our body is doing it now just because it's on autopilot. Okay, kipshuta. Okay.
What's the reward of some of those things, like picking a lip or biting fingernails?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, for some reason, picking the lip is relieving. Okay, he feels that that is a way to relieve his stress. I don't know the pathology of that, so I don't know why. Yeah.
I know for myself that it's a habit that I have a very hard time breaking. It gives a focus point.
A focus point.
Like everything is going on around and things can be crazy. Like I'm just like biting my nails, so like I'm concentrating on that.
And you're able to leave everything else.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
from my experience, it's all about control. I can't control what's going on around me. I can control my fingernails, if I need to pick up my nose, my It's all about control.
Okay. So either he's trying to take his mind away from what's going on, so he's focusing on something else, or it's control. Okay.
If the whole idea behind a habit is just that it's an autopilot, that means as soon as I realize what's happening, I take myself off autopilot, I should be able to stop like that. But that doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen because the brain has wired itself to do this, so it's going to take more time than that. But yes, it shouldn't take forever either. Once we become more conscious of it, and we're going to see ways to do that and bring it back out, we can rewire our brain. But our brain is... There's something called neuroplasticity. We're going to talk about this in 2 weeks. And what that means is that our brain is always programming itself. So if you would have caught it the next day, so probably it would be really easy, okay? Just decide not to do it. Once we've wired the brain and it's 20 times and 30 times, it's going to be a lot harder. Yeah, kid.
Once your brain is wired with the cue and then the behavior, what do you need? Everyone asks, like, what do you gain from it? You don't have to gain. The reward doesn't have to necessarily be there, no?
The reward does not have... For some reason, the brain says, if I'm not getting anything out of this, so then I'm not going to continue to keep this, and it will fade away. There's still some sort of micro decision in that part of the brain. It's not such a conscious decision. It's an unconscious decision, and that's our administrative part of the brain. And he's like, okay, I'm taking care of this for the prefrontal cortex. I'll take care of this. This is my problem to deal with. And he's always making that decision, yes or not, to continue this thing. So if it's a reward... We'll say, look, we're still profiting. Let's get this to keep going. And if not, then not.
And it would cut out.
Yeah.
We're saying the trigger becomes associated with the pleasure. That's how it works.
The trigger becomes associated with the behavior.
The pleasure, and that's why it becomes a trigger.
The trigger becomes associated with the behavior. Okay? Because the wind was not pleasurable. But it was the setting in which he formed the habit that's connected to the reward. Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. Okay, and that's box number 10. Context of the habit. Okay, this is real important. The basal ganglia is part of our brain that forms habits, and it seems to remember the context that the brain learns the habit within. So if a habit to act out is learned in the context of an empty room, this is a classic example, okay? Then in the future, any empty room may trigger an urge to act out, okay? The context in which he would act out is an empty room. His brain remembers, hey, when I'm in an empty room, okay, that reminds me to do this behavior, okay? So just by going into that empty room, it could be a trigger for him. So, you know, I didn't get here yet to how to break habits, but I just wrote Big Tzara. In the empty room case, let's brainstorm how to make this room no longer empty. We might want to stay out of the room, be elsewhere at that time, or invite people into the room, or call a friend on Skype, and like keep your computer open facing you so like they're watching you every second. Okay, that's a good chat. I thought of it this morning. Okay, next time you're afraid of doing something bad, you turn on Skype to your mother. You know, you're not going to do anything bad in front of your mother. Okay, just let her see you sleeping there. Or make a phone call. Okay? But the point is that these are ways of interrupting the context. Okay, our brain remembers where we formed this habit, and that becomes an innate part of the habit. And so if we pick on that too, that can help to break the habit. We're going to get to it too in a second. Okay, let's get on to another interesting point. The phenomena of habituation helps form a habit too. Okay, habituation is another interesting thing that our brain automatically does. It means that when we do something one time, we react by feeling good or bad about what we just did. And that's called a stimulus, okay? When we repeat the behavior several times, our brain becomes used to and unimpressed by the good or bad feeling, and we no longer react to the behavior strongly. An example is that when you take the first piece of cake, it's really good. But by the second and third piece, you already get used to it, okay? So the point here is that we get used to, sometimes we can even get used to the reward, okay? Not always. But sometimes, here's an example, we act out, it says, and feel terrible about it. We repeat the acting out, and the terrible feeling starts to evaporate, okay? And if we would have felt terrible about what we were doing every single time, it would help us not to form a bad habit, because our strong feelings would hold us back from doing this. That would be like a reinforcement not to do the thing that's going to get us in trouble. Okay, but those feelings go away. So this habit becomes subconscious, the bad feelings go away, and we're totally susceptible to our subconscious, and that's what a habit is. Okay, Now, in that case, I wrote a little possible solution there. Okay, Ozzy, take out your microscope. Hear other people describe why they need to stop this habit, and maybe by hearing it in a new way, you can feel again the importance of why you should work on breaking this habit. Okay, people that go to 12-step meetings, okay, they hear the same thing all the time, a million times. They hear from every single guy how this is not good for them. They're powerless to doing this. They have no control over it. Okay, it's ruining their life. They have to work on it. And one of the reasons why they do that is because they don't feel anymore any remorse for what they're doing. The feeling's gone away, and that's habituation. We make a habit out of the feeling associated with this. Okay, a solution for that would be, hear it so many times that you hear it in some new way that it slips past your brain, and you can feel something. Yeah?
But then at the same point is that the habituation itself could actually be a bad thing, because if you're constantly downing yourself,
mm-hmm.
that reinforces it. You can get into the mental frame that I'm upset that I've done this
mm-hmm.
character trait. I've eaten too much
mm-hmm.
once again,
mm-hmm.
and it's only when you start accepting I'm content now with however much I eat,
mm-hmm.
then you can start bringing down the amount that you eat.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure true. It's definitely true that if a person feels shame, okay, shame is what causes the addictive cycle to keep on going in circles. So if a person is knocking himself down and making himself feel like a garnish, so that's definitely going to continue what's going on. So we're not talking about shame per se, but talking about like, hey, this doesn't feel right. I know I shouldn't be doing this. I feel remorse. I feel regret. Okay? It's a little bit different than shame. There's chairs at the end if you need a chair. The end in one of the rooms there.
In the context of addiction, like that, remorse can go on for years and years and years, but still doesn't really contribute to an actual being able to stop the habit.
It by itself doesn't help. But, you know, one of the reasons I think why people go to meetings is because we hear in different ways, in a new ways, you know, reasons why we should stop. We hear it in this form of words, in that form of words, in this context, in that presentation. And by doing that, even though we don't feel anything, every once in a while we feel like, hey, out of those 30 shares of that meeting, there was that one share that clicked with me. That's a good reason to stop, or that was a good point, okay? So it's kind of like slipping past all this cold-hearted, not feeling anythingness, and there's that one message that slips through, okay? And that message is enough that it helps us get to the next week.
Are there not people in active addiction who feel remorse after every time?
Are there people? There are people. Habituation doesn't happen every time, okay? But it is a common thing, okay? Just another example, and this is one that I'm sure you'll know about. We feel it's important to manage our recovery, but after a few weeks, that feeling goes away. Okay, we get used to feelings. So it doesn't feel important to break this habit anymore or to be in recovery. When people first get into recovery for an addiction, they're like all excited and they feel good and they're like screaming at the rooftops that everyone should do what they're doing. And they have this like pink cloud where there's like no problems. It's sheer bliss from Hashem. And they know they're doing the right choice. And that always goes away after a certain amount of time, okay? And they don't feel any reason why they should be motivated to do some hard work and sometimes some embarrassing things and to schlep and speak to a sponsor and to do step work and all this stuff. And again, that's why possible solution, do something new, okay? Fellowship with a new person, read a new book on the subject, try a new ritual of breaking your habit, okay? Go to a new meeting because this is habituation. And you don't want to be stuck in habituation, so do something new. And Avodas Hashem, we call that hischadshus. Be mechadish what you're doing. Get some hischadshus somewhere, okay? Okay? Okay, now let's go to the next box. That's box number 12. Automaticity, okay? It's a very fancy word, and I'm pretty sure, although people use this word in different ways, that really all it means in our context is a habit, okay? When habits become like Folgers in your cup, okay? Automaticity is the brain's ability to learn how to perform tasks on a subconscious level so that you can do other things at the same time and multitask. Example, okay? I can walk, be on the phone, and find what I need in the store all at the same time. Okay? Now, that's because I've been on the phone hundreds of times. I've walked thousands of times. I've been in the store many times. Okay? Probably I need to focus most on looking at the shelves and finding the product that I need. And I'm able to be on the phone and walk because I'm so used to those things, I don't need to think about them anymore. My brain, the basal ganglia and other parts of my brain are taking care of the walking for me. I don't need to put focus on it. Okay? Now, when acting out, back in box 12, when acting out is repeated thousands of times, and that's not an exaggeration, the brain might make it possible to act out without barely any conscious level thinking. This can explain how a person in some cases can act out even without any thought or planning, okay? This is especially true when people go to sleep. This is a very common thing. A person is like asleep, and like before you know it, he like acted out in his sleep. And I'm not talking about Kerry, that's something else. I'm just talking about like he wakes up, he's like almost sleepwalking, and he like acts out, and then he like wakes up and doesn't know what happened. Okay, that's an example of this. I hear that all the time. It's a very common thing. Okay, and what that means again is that he has made acting out so innate, so second nature for him, that he barely has to put thought to it. So naturally, when he goes to sleep and turns his conscious brain all the way off, it automatically happens because it's just waiting to happen. It's in the subconscious, okay? A true story, okay? This is a crazy story. I like this. It's an extreme story that gives a good example. A yeshiva guy sat in a library and felt tired, okay? This is a true story. He got up to act out in order to wake himself up and then caught himself and reflected on what he was just about to do. In his mind, acting out became such an automatic response to stress, discomfort, and strong emotions that just needing a coffee prompted him to act out. Okay? Imagine yourself yawning in sheer, and without thinking, your body suddenly gets up to snort cocaine. Okay? Now, many people might not have this problem here. I don't know where everyone's holding. This is a very common thing. Okay? So we're not just talking about habits that we know about. We're also talking about habits of habituation to feelings, okay? And that's habituation. And we're also talking about doing something so much that there's barely any thought or no thought involved. Totally subconscious. So there's many types of habits, many different levels, and in many, many different ways. Did you raise your hand?
Yeah, so they're just different levels of habits.
Yeah. And then addiction is something else because addiction, they're not really clear what that is, but it's very strange. A person manages to wire his brain in a way that they cannot wire it back. And that's strange because neuroscience has found we can really wire our brain to undo anything. And the only thing that can't figure out what to do with that is addiction. Okay? Having that chronic relationship, not good relationship to the behavior in an addictive way, they haven't found how to undo that. They have found how to get out of using, you know, the drugs or whatever the addiction is. They found many ways to break all the habits that surround it, but the strong relationship he's always going to have to wine is going to be different than everybody in Shul. His reaction to wine is always going to be, if I have that one cup of wine, like, it's finished. It's going to set him right back into motion, okay? The other people in Shul, it's just a bottle of wine. It's not anything more. Yeah, here.
We were saying before the cue and behavior and then the reward. Over there, when the guy acted out in the library, well, you didn't get the reward over there, no? Because he needed a cup of coffee.
That's right. He did stop himself. He did not follow through. So that was good. Could be that was going to help him to follow through on recovery next time. But, you know, the point of that story was that he wasn't thinking of acting out. He was reading a book and he needed a coffee. He was not at all thinking about acting out. Not in the slightest. And just because he was tired and he was in a library and there was a coffee machine outside the library, he said, hey, I'm tired. I'll act out to wake up. And he's like, what? What does that mean? Okay? That was the first time it hit him, like, wow, I've taken this to a totally other level. Okay? And he thought that acting out became like a cup of coffee. That's why
It was the stress that he was tired?
Yeah, he's like really tired. And when we're tired, we do something to wake ourselves up. So you would probably go and make a cup of coffee up here, okay? But this guy, he would use, for strong feelings, he would use acting out to solve everything. He took it totally out of context, so it became a cup of coffee, it became a friend, it became anything that you needed it to be. His acting out did everything for him, and so it became a cup of coffee. Okay, now let's move into box 13. The medicine on the shelf has to go into your mouth to work, okay? Knowledge never solved any problem, okay? I'm saying this because we said a lot of interesting stuff now, but knowing that isn't going to help. We're going to have to take it to the next level and do something different, okay? So knowledge can't solve a problem, but it can be a useful roadmap to help you drive to doing the solution. Your knowledge can help you know where to go for the solution. Ultimately, by changing something in your life or doing something, that is the solution, not the mere fact that you know there's a bottle of medicine on the shelf. In regards to breaking habits, understanding how habits work and the structure of how your habit works can be a map to help you know where to go to change something in your habit loop, okay? If you look at the homework thing that we gave out, if you didn't get, by the way, email me, I'll email it to you. So we're going to have there, one of the questions is to map out exactly how your habit works, if there's some sort of habit that you want to break. Because, again, knowing how your habit works isn't going to break it, okay? But it will tell us what we need to do. And then ultimately doing that new thing, that new change, that's going to break the habit, okay? Now let's move into tachlis, okay? Ein ha-medrash ha-ikar ela ha-maisa, right? Learning things is not the point, it's doing. Yeah.
Do people realize or know what their cues or triggers are?
Some people know and some people don't. And that's why one of the questions here is to think about it, figure it out, notice, okay? Sometimes we do things that are so automatic, we don't even have a good conceptualization of what we're doing. And that's what I spoke about last week when I said, people say, I have a Yetzer Hara. Well, what is the Yetzer Hara? How does it work? What time? What place? How often? Okay, you ask yourself a lot of questions. Okay, in last week's handout, the homework was very good for this. And you start noticing, hey, the Yetzer Hara that I have is at night, in an empty room, only at this time, because I'm bored, you know, and like you find all these new details, and then you have that roadmap to know how to break the habit. Okay? We don't always know. Sometimes people totally don't realize what it is. Okay. Box 14. Okay, I'm excited because this is the stuff that helps people out, and that's why we're here. Common ways used to break habits, okay? Again, these are tools that are for habits, and we're going to move up each week. Next week, it's going to be stuff for addictions. It can still be applied to habits, and the habit stuff can still be applied to addictions, but this is definitely appropriate for, you know, less severe stuff, okay? So number one, avoid or remove triggers in your environment. Knock out the cue or trigger. Bold. Take the trigger away from you, okay? So I'm not going to tell my friends not to go out into cold weather because that's not possible, okay? But if a person has made a habit out of, you know, hanging around in a certain place where there's like a computer without filter on it or something, okay? So get out of there, right? Or put a filter on it, okay? Knock out the trigger. That's not a genius idea, but it's a very helpful idea. You'd be surprised that not everyone takes this advice. They do all types of fancy treatments and things later on, and then you find out they never even put a filter on their computer. So if you can take the trigger away from you, do it, okay? Really important. And 12 steps, so they have this cute thing called step zero, and that's the step before the steps, and that's get rid of all the things that's causing this, okay? First, let's get rid of that stuff. If you have pictures or magazines or the phone number of that girl or something, erase it. Get it out of here, okay? Get rid of that trigger. That's number one, okay? Let's look at the next dot. That's when you take the trigger away from you, okay? The second dot is take yourself out of the environment to a new place. Take yourself away from the trigger, okay? Yosef Atzadik, he ran out from the house, right? Since the brain forms habits within the context of a certain setting, place, or environment, so going on vacation from that environment is found to make it easier to break a habit, okay? I read a bunch of articles about how people that wanted to quit smoking, which, by the way, is an addiction, okay? There's a drug nicotine is a drug, but let's just say that it's a habit for right now, okay? So people found that when they would go on vacation and then they would quit smoking and then they would come back home, that interrupted the pattern because the smoking was in a certain place, it was in a certain lifestyle, it was in yeshiva. You know, I light up a cigarette when I walk from my dira to yeshiva, from yeshiva back to the dira. Before you know it, they went on this weekend to Kibbutz Chavetz Chaim. He decided not to smoke for 2 days there, and he comes back and things are easier. Because when we formed that habit, it was in that place, in that context. And our brain remembers it that way, okay? I can't guarantee any of these things will work. These are tricky things because we're dealing with the subconscious, okay? We're not dealing with conscious tools in this week. Not really, okay? All these are possible solutions. Yeah.
Based on what you were explaining before, in terms of the brain wiring and the subconscious and all that stuff, so even if I go away, right, and I quit smoking, then when I come back, so then the trigger is still there. The cue is still there. I know, like, I'm in the same base medrash I was in before. I'm mm-hmm. in the same shir I was in before. Mm-hmm. So why would that necessarily make a difference?
That's a great question, and that's why I like when people ask questions, because we can flush out all of the stuff, okay? The reason there is because the brain, this gets a little complicated, and this we're going to get into this in 2 weeks from now, but the simple explanation is because our habit can fade, okay? Our habit is made out of we make these neural networks in our brain, and these are certain patterns that our brain is forming together every time. And if we leave them away for a few times, they start to dull. Okay? And that's why when people act out a lot, their addiction gets stronger. When they start getting some abstinence and some clean time, things get a little bit easier. Because the neural networks, they start to dull. Okay? Our brain is very flexible and it's always changing. Okay? If you persist in doing something, it's going to make it stronger, stronger, stronger. But if you stop, it will dull. Okay? We have a good example in a minute. We're going to talk about making a parallel pattern. Isn't that the next one? Yeah, look at the next one, okay? We're in 14 still, but look at the dot, the third dot. Learn other habits and rituals to do instead of the bad habits. Okay, Avi, this is a good one for your question. Doing this helps us develop new habits and keeps ourselves busy with them, meanwhile letting the old habit fade away. Sometimes this is called making a parallel pattern, okay? So I have this certain habit to pick my lip, let's say, and, it's pretty strong. And I went to my kibbutz Chavetz Chaim, we're just giving an example here, or I want to make a new parallel pattern. Every time I want to pick my lip, instead I'm going to, take a squishy ball and go like this, okay? And by doing that, it's going to be a little bit hard, but those neural networks for picking my lip is going to fade away. It's going to get dull, it's going to get, it's going to break up, okay?
But then, you're getting rid of that habit with another habit.
So you're going to be stuck with that habit, right, until you get rid of it. Okay, yeah, exactly. That's replacing a worse habit with another habit, okay? So it's not necessarily a problem. Sometimes we can do healthy things. A person feels like acting out, I'm going to go on a walk, okay? But you are going to be left with you're going to have two habits to deal with at the end instead of one. But one is going to be very dull, and one is going to hopefully be a helpful one, okay? Let's move to 15. More common ways used to break habits, okay? This is not theoretical, okay? I want people to think about that. That's what the point of this paper is. If you have a bad habit or somebody you're talking to, okay, figure out what it is, how it works. Think about what we learned today in these boxes, and we're gonna figure out ways to go around this habit, okay? So let's look in 15. More common ways used to break habits. Reward yourself in a healthy way for each time that you overcome the urge to do the bad habit. Okay, this makes a new reinforcer that competes with the urge to do the habit, okay? Because we spoke about when you do a habit, you have a reward, right? And the reward is like, hey, acting out relieves my stress. It gives me something good, okay? So if I don't act out, it doesn't feel very good because I didn't deal with my stress. So to compete with that, to compete with the not feeling good about not doing what made me feel good, I have to let myself feel good with something else, which is a positive feeling good. Okay? And that's to think like, hey, I just made the right choice. I should feel good about this. Okay? I should write it down. I should treat myself out to something. I should, think of something of self-care, Whenever I, make the right...
To begin with.
What do you say?
If you're feeling bad to begin with, how do you suddenly... And that's why you try to turn to the behavior. Why would that... How would you get a good feeling?
Why not? I'm deciding to view things differently, okay? I was stuck in this habit, and this was helping me manage my stress, let's say. I was feeling really depressed, and looking at this bad, this stuff makes me feel better, and that's why I keep on doing it. So to compete with not doing it and not feeling anything, I want to give something good to myself, okay? So it's a little bit of a fight. It's not going to be so easy, but I'm going to say, hey, I just made the right choice. I should notice that. I should feel good about it. Okay, I'm not totally bad. I'm not totally a problem. I'm not totally a mistake. I'm not totally broken. I made a good choice today. Or every time I make a good choice, I'm making it up. I don't know why. I'm going to give 10 shekel to tzedakah, okay? When I make a good choice, right? I don't know. It makes me feel good when I give 10 shekel to a poor guy, okay?
You go to the pizza shop,
okay? It could be whatever it is. The person has to figure out what's rewarding for himself. It can be, I'm going to go on a walk and I'm going to... This is a special walk. I'm going to walk with myself and think about how I just made a good choice. Okay? Whatever it can be for you.
Couldn't that be counterproductive sometimes? Sometimes someone wants something they usually can't get. And if, psychologically, if you put yourself in a situation in order to get out of it, you'll get that good thing.
That's
so
true.
You might find yourself putting yourself in a not opportune situation.
That, if I understood you right, So that's a common thing that happens too. People are not honest with themselves, and they say, look, to reward myself, I'm going to get drunk, okay? And he's an alcoholic. You know, because I was sober for 2 months in AA, I'm going to get drunk, okay? And people actually think that way. So, okay, the thing we want to be doing is something that's healthy for us, and it's promoting the advancement of our health. It's making us feel good about ourselves. It's making us feel happy, proud of ourselves, okay? And it's helping us feel like, hey, you know, I have some good parts to me. I have some resources in me to make the right decisions.
I think he's thought, are you talking about, like, if I don't ask Adam to go eat an entrecote, you know?
Right, and he usually wouldn't go to entrecote.
I can't afford it.
Right, but he wants an entrecote. He wants to give himself an excuse, so he just automatically is going to put himself in situations where he has to fight it, and then if he wins it, he's going to go to entrecote. But that's not usually,
that's definitely not.
Just not.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, guys.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely not a good thing to do. So, you know, we have to be honest when we're making these types of decisions, okay? Either with ourselves, with our sponsor, with our friend. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. More common ways used to break habits. Okay, we were in 15. We said the first one. And that's talking about rewarding yourself and thinking about how you just did something good, okay? Next dot in 15, find people to share and support your goal of habit breaking. Talking to them about it will not only bring your subconscious decisions closer to your conscious, but their support will give you strength to overcome the bad habit. You will also be accountable to them to keep consistent, okay? So talking about it with somebody that you trust and maybe being accountable to them, we're trying to compete with the reward of the habit, okay? When the person is depressed and he acts out, it feels really good. We have to compete with that. The only way we're going to do that is if we are bringing something else onto the scene. If you just don't act out, but you don't advance anything in your life, it's going to be a tough battle, okay? That's like what white knuckling is, if you've ever heard of white knuckling, okay? We want to change things. We want to make things better and improved and different. We want to advance and grow, okay? So we're competing with that sad feeling. We want to bring in a good feeling. For that anxious feeling of like, I feel like I need to act out. If I don't, something's going to happen. We need to do something. We'll exercise, you know, and that will manage that energy and make us feel good afterwards. We're trying to compete with a habit. That's how I want us to think about this, okay?
You have to find a reward that's just as big as the old reward.
Yeah, just as big, okay? Even in addiction treatments, there's a whole way in rehabs, which is called the community reinforcement approach, okay? And it all works on this science. They took it down to such a science that they help people pop out of addiction and stay out of addiction with rewards. Because addiction or any type of thing that we don't want to be doing is rewarding. And that's why we're doing it. We're not doing it because we're suicidal, okay? We're not doing it because we're psychotic. We're not doing it because we have an obsession to cut ourselves. That's another problem. Maybe people are doing things like that on the side. But when we're talking about pleasurable things that we're doing because we're sad, so when we look at things that make us feel good about ourselves, we can understand that's a reward. He's depressed, yeshiva's not working out for him, he turns on Google Images, and that makes him feel better, right? So we're trying to compete with that. Let's look at the next one. Notice each time you have an urge and be mindful of it, okay? Practice mindfulness in your life until you can put some space between what you think and your reactions to it, okay? The idea of mindfulness is a huge, huge subject, and we're going to get to it in 2 weeks. You know, part of what we said today is that when we form habits, so part of this is not only are we dealing with the reward, we're also fighting against the subconscious, okay? This is really hard. And we almost like dip right into the behavior without thinking, because that's, you know, if we follow the story that we started with in today's talk here, so we used to think about this in a conscious place, and then our brain sent this message down to somewhere else in the basal ganglia, which says, stop thinking about it so much, we'll take care of it for you, right? So you're not even thinking about this, and you're jumping right into it without any thought, okay? And that's pretty hard, because how can you fight something that you're not even thinking about, okay? So to do that, this is another etza, which is to notice each time a person has an urge, and be mindful of it. Just notice when the habit happens. Notice it, okay? Get good at noticing things. And so that means, like, to notice, hey, I feel like this urge, you know, the room is empty, and I'm feeling like I want to act out. Notice that. That's all. Just notice it. And by doing that, you'll make a little bit of space between the things you dive right into, okay? and your thoughts. You're going to put a little bit of thought into that place, okay? 1 centimeter of thought, okay? This is called mindfulness. It's a huge topic. It's one of the cutting-edge ways of breaking habits and addictions today. If you guys are able to come on Wednesday at the Sober House, you can ask me the details afterwards. This Wednesday, a big expert is going to teach people how to overcome these urges, okay, with mindfulness. She's going to do a workshop on it. It's 10 to 11:30
A.M.
And the end is going to be archived on online, but you know, you really want to experience it in person. She's going to do it with people, but okay. So notice each time you have an urge, and by noticing it, that puts like a little space, a little chink in between diving right into the subconscious thing and doing it. Okay. Let's look at the next one. When you feel triggered, rehearse in your mind or orally what you'd rather be doing instead. Practice this enough times until you've added this healthy behavior into your habit loop as well, at least in your mind, if not physically as well, okay? So, again, we're dealing with the reward. We're also dealing with the subconscious. So rehearse or practice what you'd rather be doing instead, okay? So he's got that extra half hour at night. He's sitting in his room, and it's like the empty room. His roommate is the big masmid, and he's not going to come into the room till midnight. And so he's got that time, like he's supposed to go to sleep now. There's no one in the room, and he feels really triggered because no one's going to watch what he wants to do, okay? So practice, what would he rather be doing instead during this time, okay? Would he rather be making some special Seder during that few minutes until his roommate comes, okay? Does he want to rehearse thinking about, like, if he would act out, and then afterwards he'd have to, like, clean himself all up, and he'd feel garbage, and he'd feel disgusting, and he'd feel a little depressed, and he'd rehearse all of this in his mind so he can follow it all the way through and know where it's going to in the end, okay? So we're, like, the habit is in the subconscious, and we're programmed to, like, do this whole Seder of events, this whole order of events. We're going to rehearse either in our mind or physically something else at the end. Okay? Sometimes it's good to follow through. Where is this going? Okay? Where is this going to go? It's going to go nowhere. He's still going to feel depressed. His life's not going to be any better. He's going to feel bad about himself. And he's going to want to change this behavior tomorrow. So, like, he's not gaining anything from this. Rehearsing those thoughts, or maybe rehearsing a different type of, a habit that he wants to be doing instead. Okay? These are the last three boxes. Let's go to 16. Okay? By the way, this stuff, if you would do 100 internet searches about habits and how to break habits, this is the classic stuff, okay? This is basic stuff. It's a little bit, like I said, it's a little bit, like, ambiguous to me. It's a little bit hard because you never know which one of these things can help. Sometimes it won't work, sometimes it will work. And that's why we should have this flexibility to try different things, okay? Let's look at 16. Changing the setting, doing, or viewing. Above are three categories you can use to change habits with, okay? Changing the setting, doing, or viewing, those are three ways that you can change something that's going on. So let's talk about changing the setting, okay? So number one, change locations. At 10 p.m. to 11, he usually acts out in his room. Tonight, he will be in his friend's room reading a book, okay? And that's talking about changing the setting in the way of changing the location. Let's talk about changing the timing. The timing is also part of the setting, right? He usually acts out when he's on the computer at 8. He will now try to use the computer at 2 to change the timing, okay? It's not that there's more people around at 2, so he's not going to do anything bad. There's going to be the same amount of people, but he's changing the timing. That's changing the setting, okay? And that's we're like trying to trick our brain in this way. We're trying to trick our subconscious. We're trying to like find that other place where maybe the habit didn't form in this. You know, the habit is at 8 a.m., at 8 p.m., but it's not at 2 p.m., okay? Number three, rearrange the furniture. By moving his bed and dresser differently, moving a picture on the wall to the other wall, he's changing the environment in which the habit was learned. Okay? This place looks different. Okay? This stuff really works. It's really amazing. It's just, like I said, it's always hard to figure out which one works. So you can take a stab at any of them. But afterwards, when I hear the stuff that works, it's like it blows me away. And it's all because of the science that we said. Okay? The basic science is we learn habits in a certain context, in a certain way. In a certain place, in a certain time, with the wind coming in through the window in that story, right? So if we can change or alter anything of that, that can make a difference. Okay, the last one in that box 16, change something in the way you look. Dress nice and neat for a few days. Look put together while trying to change the habit. That's changing the way you carry yourself in relation to the habit, okay? So all these things is changing the setting, okay? Let's move on to 17. Now we have changing the doing, okay? This is a big one. Taking care of the problem with baby steps instead of big steps. Most people will tell you they've tried something 100 times. But upon further investigation, you discover they tried the same types of things in the same way. So all 100 times was really just one time, okay? I get this all the time. Okay, this is a really common thing. Because we're talking about habits. We're talking about things that we're kind of stuck in doing things a certain way. You have to really be creative and do it really differently for it to be different. Okay? So changing the doing means a guy's like, look, I've been in the 12, I'm giving an example. I've been in the 12 steps for 15 years and it hasn't really gotten me anywhere, and I did the steps and I did all the homework and I did this and I did that, and he's telling you what he did. Okay? If you interview him a lot and you ask him a lot of questions, you will often, not always, but often find that he did it the same way a lot of times. And a new way might be, like, okay, you know, that was, you did it too much, or you did it too little, or that sponsor wasn't good for you, or maybe that meeting wasn't the strongest meeting, or maybe, you know, and you find some different thing to change, and that makes all the difference, okay? So we want to do things differently, okay? Look at the next one. Do less. Sometimes people try too hard or too much and create extra problems that just exacerbate the main problem. Do one or two helpful things at a time, not more than you can handle. Don't do things that take away resources like sleep, peace of mind, and downtime to relax, okay? Those are your resources for life. Sleep, peace of mind, and downtime to relax. You don't want to be doing anything that's taking them away. You don't want to be doing something that's going to make it that you're not going to be able to eat properly for 3 weeks. That's just going to make you also stressful. It's not going to change anything, okay? So when we do something, we want to do it differently. We want to do it. Sometimes people do too much, so do less, okay? Let's look at the next one. If you're doing something that you hate or it's really heavy on you, stop doing it. It's probably counterproductive, okay? Take out your magnifying glass and you'll see an example, and I was pretty extreme here. Example, you like learning Be'iyun, but when you do it for more than 2 hours, you feel like there's a jackhammer mutilating your brain, okay? Those are words that somebody gave me, okay? Instead, figure out how to reduce your stress and figure out with your Rebbe about learning in a different way that doesn't kill you, okay? So if there's something that you're doing because you think it's the right thing to do and it maybe has something very positive about it, but it's killing you, so you're dying. So don't do it, okay? Not everyone picks up on this, especially people that mean well, that are very from, they're very religious, or they're a big masmid, or whatever it is. A person says, look, v'higisibol yama v'layla, I gotta learn every second all the time, which of course is true in halacha, I'm not gonna fight with that. But what does that mean? Okay? And for him, it means that he is learning till 1, 2 in the morning every night, he's not getting enough sleep, then he gets very depressed and stressed out, and that's just because he's not getting sleep. And because of that, he acts out, and that makes him more depressed, and things go totally out of control, okay? So don't do too much that you can handle, okay? Don't do something that's heavy for you. If he's in this yeshiva, and he hates it, and he can't stand it, so probably it's not very good to try to change a habit while you're there, okay? That's just adding a lot of extra stuff to your life. Okay, let's look at the next one. Living efficiency conserves energy. Living efficiently conserves energy. Living with chaos and rumination, which is like thinking a lot again and again, drains energy. Take care of things right away. Get up on time. Do whatever you need to do so that your life will be less complicated and chaotic than it may already be. Okay? Thinking too much also drains energy and makes you tired, so you want to fix that too. Okay? Again, take this problem, cut it down to size. Okay? You know, a person's trying to stop acting out. Okay? That's a great thing to do. First, get up on time. That's going to give you more time in your day to accomplish things, and that's going to give you a chance to do something that you enjoy and to have enough time to be successful at it and to meet with some friends and go to some groups and whatever it is, okay? So you really want to live as efficiently as you can. Okay, I have a partner, I have a business partner in something that I'm doing. He has this book called The 4-Hour Work Week, and apparently it sold like a million copies, and it's all about how to live in the most efficient way. So I'm not recommending it because I never saw it in my life, but like that, the idea is, you know, he has theories there like checking your email twice a week saves more time than every day. Okay, I've actually found that to be true. So live efficiently, and you might find it's a lot easier to live. And if it's easier to live, it'll probably be easier to break your habit. There will be less reinforcement to do the habit. Okay, let's look at the next one. get out of the other side of the bed or change something in your routine. Okay? This is a true story that happened. There was a couple fighting, and the husband kept on saying to her, Betty, you know, you're always getting up on the wrong side of the bed. Okay? So there was a famous therapist named Bill O'Hanlon, and he talks a lot about the setting, doing, or viewing. This is his stuff. And he thought to himself, like, this guy is always saying to Betty to get out on the right side of the bed, so maybe she should try that, okay? So he suggested to her secretly that the next day she gets up and she climbs over her husband's bed and gets out on the other side, and it worked, and they were not fighting. She wasn't fighting with him, he wasn't fighting with her, everything was different, okay? He tried this with a lot of people, and it worked. After some time, there was habituation, which we spoke about, and, like, this thing died off, whatever was making it work. So then what did she do? She climbed out the front of the bed, okay? Now, how did that work? The reason why it worked is because they were fighting, they were in a certain habit, a certain pattern. She changed something in the routine of how she starts her day, okay? She just climbed over her husband's bed. It had nothing to do with their marriage. It didn't have to do with the dog and not with which school their kids should go to. But they changed something in the routine of their day, which was a way of bypassing the habit in her brain, and that made all the difference, okay? These are really cute tools. That's why, like, I can't tell you to do that. I don't know if that'll work or not. It's harmless. If you want to do that, that's great. Okay? We're going to play with all these things and see which will make the difference. Let's just do 18 and we'll be done. Changing the viewing. Okay? This is a huge one. Change the perspective and see how it makes change. You can reframe the nature of a problem. Example. Instead of wanting to stop acting out because it's bad or you're bad, think about stopping because you deserve to live better. Okay? This is a big one, especially in sexual addiction. There's somebody named Patrick Carnes, and he made this into an addiction, so to speak. He fought with everybody, and he did a lot of research to show them it's called an addiction, and we should be treating it, and we should be studying it. And anyways, he wrote a great book called A Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps. And in his book, he talks about how, you know, when we beat ourselves up and hurt ourselves and knock ourselves down, so it's much harder to change things in our life. But if we take things gently, not to cover things up, not to lie about things, but to do it in a more gentle, respectful way of our strengths and our weaknesses all in one package, it's a lot easier to change. Okay? And so over there he does a lot of these things. He says, I deserve to change. I deserve to stop doing this thing wrong. And therefore I should treat myself out to a day of being sober. Okay? That's very different than I'm a bad person, I'm a pervert, I better stop. Okay, we're reframing the nature of the problem. We're changing the view. Sometimes that makes all the difference. Okay, let's look at the next one. Change the questions and ask more helpful questions. Example. Okay, people, we ask questions in our mind, and sometimes we get so upset we actually say it in our words. Instead of, God, why are you doing this to me? You can ask, God, what can I do to go through this easier? Okay, I used this last night and it worked. Okay. I have a baby that was waking us up every half an hour, and it was really, really hard because I knew I was going to be exhausted. I wasn't going to have time to sleep in the morning. I have a long day today, and sometimes in the middle of the night, I get really upset, and I'm like, Hashem, why are you doing this to me? Like, let the baby just go to sleep. Come on. Like, why do you have to do this? And I get really upset, okay? But I wrote this slide yesterday, and I said, that's a tool. Change the question, okay? So this time, instead of saying, Hashem, why are you doing this to me? I said, Hashem, you know, what can I do that will help me get through this easier? And that itself helped me get through it easier. Okay? So it's a tool. It worked. I used it. Okay? Okay, we're talking about changing the viewing. I'll give you just another personal example. This morning, I had a lot of work to do. And I owe a lot of Akar Satov to another therapist who he helped me out a lot in different ways professionally. And he doesn't know how to use a computer. And he said, Avi, do you have a computer on you? I said, yes. Can you help me do something on the computer? Okay, so I ended up helping him out doing his thing on the computer. I didn't get any of my work done. So I could have viewed it and said, wow, I wasted my whole morning. Or I could have said, oh, I did chesed this morning. Okay, and renaming the nature of what happened makes a big difference. Okay, let's move to the next one. Finding the blessing in the pain or problem. Okay, find the blessing, try to understand or think about, make a theory. You know, what's the good thing that's coming out of this? I'm going to learn more about myself. I'm going to become more honest. I'm going to get closer to Hashem this way, whatever it is for you. Okay, next one, make believable hope. This is something I talk about a lot. Don't try to believe something unrealistic and be disappointed. Set realistic, reasonable standards and goals, okay? A lot of times our view about our acting out, for example, is totally unrealistic. Okay? Try to be realistic. It doesn't mean that we have permission to act out. Doesn't mean that. But at the same time, don't be so disappointed if you did it again that, like, oh my gosh, I'm a total failure, and then fall into it again because you feel that way. Okay? Try to be realistic. Understand this is a habit. My brain is wired a certain way. I'm trying to unwire it. It might take some time. For each person, it will take the amount of time that it takes. Each person has a certain path that Hashem gives him. You know, I'm on my path. I'm taking the next best step. I'll take it one day at a time, 1 minute at a time. You know, make things very realistic and cut them down to size. Okay? Let's move to the next one. Trying to forget something can help. What would be helpful to you to forget, okay? This is helpful a lot of times when a person can't get over a certain thing, and because of that thing, he's just stuck in his pattern, so we want to forget it. Sometimes forgetting things is good, okay? He can't forget, oh my gosh, you know, I was supposed to, you know, I was interviewed live on the radio, and I was supposed to say this, and I made a total fool of myself. I said the wrong thing instead, and, like, he can't get over it, so forgetting that is going to be helpful to him, okay? Okay, next one. What advice would you give to someone if they came to you for advice about your problem? Okay, this is a big one too. I've seen this do wonders. Okay, think about what advice you'd give to somebody else with the problem if they're coming to you with your problem. The reason is because we're stuck in a certain way of thinking, a certain pattern, and this is a way to kind of jump out of our brain and say, like, where all of a sudden we're thinking about, well, if Shlomi came to me and he would ask me, I would tell him to simply do this. Put in a filter, change my room, and maybe speak to somebody about getting, you know, some antidepressant medication, get some exercise, you know, change my chavrusa. And I'm like, hey, I could be doing all of that myself, okay?
That's why the 12th step is oftentimes the most powerful.
Because?
Because the 12th step is working.
Oh, the 12th step, yes. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Last one here. To reflect on what unrealized truths might there be about oneself, others, the world, life, or the true nature of the Avodas Hashem. Okay? A lot of times we're stuck in a certain pattern or habit because we know the reality to be a certain way, and things aren't going in that way, and therefore we are suffering a lot, and we're just making things a lot harder for ourselves. Okay? So this thing here about changing the viewing says, you know, what unrealized truth is there about Avodas Hashem? Maybe Avodas Hashem is different. Maybe becoming a gadol is different. Maybe recovery is different. Maybe Parnasa, whatever it is that he's dealing with, maybe there's something about this that's different, okay? I know a certain business, I was talking to a friend of mine about a certain business, and he was told by two people in that business, it takes 5 years to start making steady money in that business, okay? Now, if he didn't know that, he might be killing himself every day for the first 2-3 years, like, I'm not making any money, I'm not making any money, I'm a failure. But that's the nature of the business. So what unrealized truths do we have? Okay, and that's all about changing the viewing. Okay, so just to recap, we spoke about habits. We spoke about changing the setting, viewing, or doing. You know, the habits are, it's providing us some sort of relief. You know, and so we want to compete with that. Maybe we want to make a parallel habit. We spoke about how it happens in a certain place or a setting, so we want to change that, okay? So we're trying to use just the knowledge we know about habits to try to change something and kind of beat the system, okay? Next week, we're going to talk about tools from addiction counseling, and those are my favorite tools because they're very direct. They're very direct about what we're doing on a conscious level. The week after that, we're going to do stuff in neuroscience, which is really cool, and that's about how to rewire our brain in different ways. So we have some good stuff coming up, okay? If anyone didn't get the handout, so email me. If you have any questions, email me or call me on the phone. Yashar Kuach.